This is the Dialed Health Podcast. It's your time to start moving forward. What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Dialed Health Podcast. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and head coach here at DialedHealth.com. And today we are talking about the five habits of fitness freaks. I came up with this list based on the people I've been around, both in the general fitness space, so more like bodybuilders, and also based off of the endurance freaks that I know, which are world tour pros and world champion downhill racers and enduro riders. And when I compare and look at all those habits of those people, it's like, what is it that they're doing that we could also implement into our own lives? And more importantly, to do it effortlessly. And I say that not because it's going to be easy and it's not going to take work, but because the people that we truly admire who are doing these things well, or those fitness freaks that you can visualize, there's also a sense to them that they're just doing it in a way that flows. And that's what we want for ourselves, because you don't want to be a stressed out psycho like there are out there who, you know, you might look at the person and see that they're a fitness freak, but you also don't want to emulate their lifestyle. So we're trying to get that real vision of who you want to be in particular and what those habits are you're going to have to implement, or that you may already have, that will get you closer to there. So I'm excited for this episode, and I'm going to warn you right now, I get passionate about some of these topics. And it's just my mood this week. This was actually going to be a podcast purely about motivation. And I turned it to this just because I was flowing with it a little bit more. I felt like I had more information for you and more insight to give back to you in this direction. But I just was like on one. So prepare yourselves for some real passion. I do not hold back as far as the reality of some of these concepts and ideas go, and just the habits in general. So I hope you love the episode. And next week, we're going to be back with a guest who is Jonathan Lee from Trainer Road. I know a lot of Dialed Fam members know and love Jonathan Lee. But we're going to do the interview soon and basically just discuss all the ins and outs of my Everesting attempt for the DH Vert Challenge. He's helping me set up this ride. And I mean, anyone who knows Jonathan Lee from Trainer Road like knows that he is the biggest wealth of knowledge and information. Like, if you want literally anyone in your corner helping you with something like an Everesting ride, this is the guy. I mean, that is what's so rad about, knowing Jonathan and thankfully being able to call him my friend, is that we can, he's an insane resource. That's all I got to say. So I can't wait for you to hear our discussion about it. We've already gone back and forth, and that is what sparked the idea. I was like, dude, we got to record this conversation, because there are so many nuggets that I'm learning and so much real discussion about the process of setting this thing up. So I'm excited for it. And before we jump into today's episode, I got a really cool testimonial about someone who listens to the podcast regularly, and I thought that you might enjoy it. So here is what it is. It's from Andrew, I don't want to say this wrong. Legayada. His Instagram is at 4x2legs, but he reached out to me with a really cool email, and I thought I'd read it to you. So he says, I'm finding my rhythm to fit your program into my workflow while I'm temporarily in Thailand. By the way, new Dialed Fam member. He says, it's a 45-minute commute using public transportation here, and so I've been listening to your podcast starting all the way back at episode 1 and working my way through them all. Which, by the way, he is not the only person to do that, which blows my mind. So if you are someone who has listened to every single episode, I freaking love you. He says, however, I did skip to your podcast with Marcus. He says, the British journalist guy. Shout out to you, Marcus. That episode is rad, by the way. He says, and holy crap, that was an amazing interview/story. Currently on episode 13 on mental toughness, and that really spoke to me, since it's where my mindset has already been. It's just refreshing to hear it from time to time. I'm at a point where I leave one headphone in and just have your podcast going on in the background at work. Totally not ignoring my boss, is what he says. I'm a big Spotify user, but went to the Apple app and left a review/rating. By the way, I got to pause and note that this is one of the other reasons I had to say this. That really has such an impact on the growth of this thing and my ability to get better guests for you guys, and to basically like endorse the podcast. Like, people, that's one of the only outwardly views that someone can have of the show, is how many ratings and reviews that it has. So it's very valuable, and I really appreciate that. says, seriously though, I'm loving the energy on the podcast and how you make your concepts slash lessons relatable. Since we haven't had the chance to formally meet, this is the best way I can gauge your personality and feel like we've met in person. I definitely respect your hustle and it's very motivating to reinforce my why. Oh, I love that. That is like everything I'm trying to do. And also I appreciate Andrew bringing up the fact that a lot of the concepts and lessons I do are relatable. Of course, we do talk science. We do have information that is, you know, kind of like straight out of the textbook sometimes. But I've always found that having things digestible in a real life sense, even when it can feel like bro science, or, you know, sometimes I do have to include the real bro science because it's like the reality, you know, of what we're training and the world we live in and the people we're around and the ideas and the concepts that we have to sort through and figure out what truth is. So it's all a part of it. And I've made a real point to make sure I don't go too textbook and just try and relate with people. So I'm happy that he's experiencing that. And I hope you guys are as well. And thank you so much for the support on the podcast. I'm really stoked on kind of where we're at, just with everything right now. So with that being said, jump into this episode. I hope you love the solo passion. And then we're going to finish it up with a little weekly thoughts before you guys get into your own week and absolutely crush it. These are five habits of fitness freaks. These are traits, commonalities that most likely that person you have in your head, that visual, they probably have all of these traits. At least from my experience, I built this list myself. And I've worked with these people in the past. I've raced with these people in the past and currently. And it's cool because I've spent so much time on like the strength, the bodybuilder side of it, being in just Globo, you know, general fitness gyms and those types of settings. But I've also ridden with world tour pros and raced against the best cyclists in the world, you know, in a number of disciplines. So it's cool because obviously there's proof right there that not one body type fits the mold of what a fitness freak is. For one, we can look up to endurance athletes for what they're capable of doing. We can look up to even bodybuilders for just purely the aesthetics that they have. And it's interesting to me because, and maybe it's more, I'm more biased this direction because of my strength background, but it's interesting that I would still think of a bodybuilder's aesthetic first when I think of a fitness freak, opposed to an endurance athlete. Even though like endurance is everything that we kind of strive for in general as cyclists, you know, like all of our fitness goals lie within endurance. And thankfully, if you are strength training and cycling consistently, most likely, as long as your body fat's low, you're gonna have a very aesthetically pleasing body to begin with. But still, like, I get this visual of a crazy bodybuilder. In fact, the person I get the visual of is Mike Thurston, who's this fitness influencer, one of the biggest influencers in the world. And regardless of whether or not you think this guy's a douche or you're into it or whatever, it is undeniable that you see this guy and you don't say, that is a freak right there. What is that guy doing? And maybe you jump straight to steroids or whatever it is, but regardless, like, you see this person, you're like, that is a freak right there. And I've worked with guys like this. I've worked with women like this. Oh my gosh, like one trainer in particular, her name was Judy. She was from England. She, dude, came into the gym I was working at as a new trainer. And I just remember thinking, wow, Judy is so sweet. She's got a cool accent and she could, without a doubt, kick my ass. I don't know how else to say it. I was like, Judy's a freak. She was a bodybuilder and I am really happy I'm on her good side. She was so sweet. But still, like, I've been with those people and that's my first thought of with fitness freaks. But now it's like, okay, I'm riding and racing with these endurance freaks and a lot of them actually do have great aesthetics and you know what their performance can be. And don't jump to the worst cycling aesthetic that you've ever seen. I know it's easy to do as well, because that's kind of a, let's just say like a stereotypical thing that you would do, I guess. It's the dogma behind the cycling body is that it has to look horrible. It's not the truth. It's not the case. But you jump to that side and you're like, okay, the truth is there are fitness freaks in every one of these disciplines and body types. And it's cool to look up to certain people for certain things. It's okay to separate it, but you also want to sort of have your North Star as far as where would you, if you were considered a fitness freak, what would you kind of look like? Like, how would that dynamic be? Would it be more endurance? Would it be more strength? Would it be a kind of a mix of the two and just staying lean? Like, what is it, just purely your athletic ability? What is it? And I think it's good to kind of ponder that, because although you have to understand, you know, your genetics are just mean that you'll never look exactly like someone else, no matter what. Like, everyone's got their strengths, everyone's got their weaknesses, but never look at someone's physique, and this is already kind of a sidebar note, and just think, I want to look exactly like that, because you're not going to. That's the most disappointing thing you can do. You could have the same lifestyle, the same training schedule, you could put out the same training stress and volume and whatever, and look, eat the same diet and look different because of your genetics. So keep that in mind. However, you could build a physique that someone else says, wow, this person is a freak. Their performance is a freak. Or they have freaky performance, whatever. So I'm bringing that up because I was like almost curious as to what I thought of as a real fitness freak. Because as soon as I went the bodybuilder route, I was like, wait a second. That doesn't really line up with my true goals and the things that make me happy, which is performing on the bike and having the best riding experience I can. And also being able to pick up my kid and, you know, chuck him into a pool without throwing my back out. You know what I mean? Like, I want to have general life, health, strength. I don't want to be, you know, I've got to be able to be strong in just day-to-day life. So those were like all the values I had to think of. But when you think of the criteria under fitness freak, there is one thing in particular that I think is more important to me than anything. And that is when it looks effortless. When you see someone who you visualize as like a fitness freak and it looks effortless for them, at least your perception of it is, that is so much more attractive than the stressed out person who maybe has those aesthetics, maybe they have their performance, but you know it's like killing them, which are also types of people I've been around, and they look miserable. And from afar, you know, when you can't see the frown on their face, maybe you would say, oh my gosh, that person's a freak, but you get to know them right away and it's just unattractive. So they need to have that effortless sort of like I guess perception to them. They need to have that radiance to them, to where they're not only the fitness freak, but it's just flowing. You know what I mean? And these five traits are basically in line with that whole idea of, you know, perceiving it as an effortless lifestyle, because again, it's not going to be easy, but you don't want to be stressed out and hate the process the whole time. However, if you currently do hate the process of training right now, I'm going to give you a tip in this episode and kind of shed some light on why that can change, because I know it can. Now, take a sip of water with me because I'm already getting parched. Come on now, it's the drinking game. Chug. Oh yeah, that was at least 3.5 ounces. Alrighty, first things first. Number one, their training, diet, rest, etc. So their training lifestyle, it's a dial. It's not an on or off switch. Okay, this is the one I had to start with because you know I value consistency more than anything else. Consistency will get you more results than anything else. And I just can't respect someone that trains super hard for 6 months and then doesn't do anything for 6 months. It's just, I watch it so often. I've had clients in the past who I've worked with in person who do this. This mentality is a disaster. It is an absolute disaster. If you are literally all in or all out, you are going to fail over and over and over again. And every single time that you fail, it's going to be easier to fail. You are literally creating like a neural pathway in your brain that says, I'm good until about this point and then I'm done for a while. And it gets easier and easier and easier to fall into that habit and just that lifestyle. So remember, you can't just be the too much or too little person. Like, the on or off switch doesn't work. It needs to be a dial. You have to have your baseline of consistent training. You dial it up when you can and you dial it back down when you need to. That's all it is. The fittest people I know and the people who do this effortlessly are on a dial. They are not on the on or off switch. So here's the thing. If you found yourself, and by the way, this goes with, yeah, diet, this goes with training, this goes with rest and recovery. You have to have the whole package. And this is not to overwhelm you, but the truth is you do need to consistently rest, to consistently train hard, you know, at some point during the week. you do need to eat well enough consistently to fuel your performance, to maintain your body fat levels or your weight or whatever it might be. Just getting in general vitamins and nutrition, again, with recovery and performance. Your whole body works together. You can't nail one thing and suck at the other and think that you're gonna be your best. So just think, it's not on or off switch, it's a dial. If you feel like you're in that habit of training really hard for a short period of time, or even maybe up to 6 months, and then you just completely fall off the bandwagon, or maybe you train really good all year, and then Halloween hits, and for the rest of the holidays, you're like a different person, and you put on 10, 15 pounds, maybe more, and then you restart the process every year, I would tell you, you have to reset your baseline with low intensity that is almost too easy, so that you can then dial it up. And when you dial it back down, instead of turning it off, you can go back to that low intensity baseline. So this is why I kind of like programming loosely. Whereas even for myself, in regards to my training week, I look at it, I'm like, okay, I have 7 days in a week, right? I'm going to strength train total body 2 days a week. And I'm gonna ride or pedal 4 days a week. And I want one basically complete rest day per week. And which is, it's interesting because right now I'm actually experimenting with a third upper body day or a little bit more strength volume on my rest day, but ignore that for now because I'm just kind of experimenting. But basically you have one complete rest week. Okay, you have 4 days of pedaling. Well, although I do have an idea of the specific types of pedaling I want to do, I leave it open to pedaling, whether that's road bike, whether that's trainer, whether that's mountain bike, because I know as soon as I set something hard in stone, and you can have plan A, plan B, plan C, whatever, it's another way to do it. And because my weeks aren't all that different, and I'm sure yours are the same way, you'll have an idea of what you're going to do, but at the end of the day, did you pedal? You know what I mean? Like, did you hit the minimum of pedaling? Did your 90 minute or let's just say 120 minute sweet spot interval session end up being a 30 minute active recovery session? Honestly, is that ideal? No, but it's so much better for you to do that active recovery session and keep the habit of the daily training, keep your body moving. And that is that low baseline. That is literally you adapting. And instead of just not doing anything and turning the switch off, you dial it back and you do what you can. That will serve you so much longer and in such a healthier way, long term, than you just being like, nope, missed my workout, can't do it. This goes for strength training. I'll have sessions where I'm like, this is gonna be an hour and a half crusher session. I have full access to my studio to be like, you know what? Something happened and now I can only do 15 minutes with this little mini loop band at home, and the rest is gonna be body weight. And I'm just going to barely get to the point where I warm up, hit, you know, get a slight, maybe like a little slight pump in my hamstrings or in my chest or whatever it might be, and do a couple ab movements and then I'm done. But you know what? You didn't miss. You adapted and you just turn the dial back down instead of flipping it all the way off. And then you don't have to feel like you have to make up for stuff as much. And so, I don't know, that's the way you do it. And then guess what? You can also dial it up. You're gonna have just as many, if not more, opportunities to do that than to completely, you know, turn it all the way off, turn it all the way on. So you get the point of what I'm trying to say. But remember, it's a dial, it's not an on or off switch. The fittest people you know, I promise you, they think this way. Now, let's take a sip. We should probably just take a sip between each point. We're going on number two. Number two is, they love the process of training. Now, if you hate doing the work, don't worry, because you can change. You have to believe me on this one. A willingness to change and literally being open to it is obviously the first step. Like, you have to believe me to an extent, but I'll just give you a perfect example right now. Okay, for one, I'll say my dad used to force me to have to strength train. That wasn't always something I really, really loved to do, but very specifically, I used to hate road riding. I used to hate road riding. Even I hated road riding for 5 or 6 years before I even did it. I refused to clip in. I refused to wear Lycra. And then finally, when I started racing enduro, gosh, I probably hated road riding for 10 years. Yeah, at least when I look back at the actual timeline. When I started riding enduro, the very first enduro race I did, I was so smoked from. It was a short race too. It was two stages, but I had never ridden that hard for that long in my life. And I remember I was so tired from it. I was in like the lodge at North Star, laying on my side, literally shoveling fries into my mouth because I was too tired to sit up. And this was a total race time of like 16 minutes. I mean, it was a joke. And so I knew I needed to add endurance. So that's why I started road riding. So I had purpose behind it, but I hated it so much. I didn't understand pacing. I didn't understand nutrition. I was on terrible equipment. It was all hand-me-down. My shoes didn't fit. I didn't even have Lycra at first, by the way. So I was wearing basketball shorts. Just to give you guys perspective. And I'm like in my early 20s at this point, mid-20s. So it's not like I'm a little kid who's like 12 years old with a skateboard helmet trying to road bike. Like I'm like a borderline a grown man out there looking like an absolute goof, hating this, but just doing it for the results. Now, here's the thing. You can't be always totally focused on the outcome, which again, the whole point of number two is they love the process. But if the outcome is enough to get you motivated to start, that is okay. And when you get the results, even if it's not like, it probably won't be the end result you'll feel first, but even when you get that next result, it's enough motivation to kind of hook you a little bit more, to remind you why you're doing it. And this is exactly what happened with road riding. I started doing it. I did everything wrong about road cycling. I just did everything wrong. But because I was out there doing it consistently, I still got faster and I got more fit on my mountain bike. So I'd go out for trail rides where I was an actual like pro at, and riding at a pro level, and I'm like, and racing pro, and I'm like, dude, like I'm riding and racing so much better. And so that also kind of hooked me the results again. So then you're kind of one step closer to your goal, you're reminded of the purpose, you're feeling the results, and then you kind of get more interested also, because now it's like, okay, I'm doing everything wrong, and I'm still getting results. What if I start improving on this a little bit more? So that interest will hook you a little bit more. And so then you're at that point, you have a purpose, you're more interested, and now you're also not questioning why you're doing it. Like when it sucks, and again, I hope you know all of these rules go to apply to strength training specifically. Because when you're doing a workout that you don't want to be doing, I know what that feels like. You're literally doing it and asking yourself, why am I doing this at the same time? I know what that feeling is. Like in your head, you're like, this sucks, why am I doing this? But the more you get the results, so you have to get there, obviously do it long enough to get some of the results, you get the interest, and then you don't have to question why you're doing it, because when those thoughts come in your head, automatically you're able to say, I'm so much faster on my mountain bike, or I'm losing the body fat I want, or my just endurance is getting better. So making sure that you get to that point is very, very important. And from there, you can kind of like, now you're not questioning why you're doing it, and then you can kind of just get into the zone. And then I got to the point where I was like, wow, road riding is really convenient for my schedule. Boom, there's another bonus. Oh, road riding, I can really zone out when I road ride. Oh, I'm exploring new roads. Oh, I've never done this. Like, I'm learning nutrition better. I'm getting better at hydration. I just got this new bib that's actually comfortable. I have shoes that fit now. I just got a better bike. And like all of these things start to snowball the same way they would in strength training or in any other riding discipline. And so what is crazy is like I went from absolutely hating it to it being one of my favorite things in the world now. Literally, like I it's crazy for me to even say this, but I kind of crave road riding more frequently now than I crave mountain biking. And a lot of that has to do with my lifestyle in general, with kids and work and, you know, just realistically knowing what my schedule is. And I live in the suburbs. So long story short, it's just become one of my favorite things ever. I would have never freaking guessed. And if you approach it like that, strength training, biking, whatever it is on your schedule, you can absolutely fall in love with the process no matter how much you hate it now. I've watched clients do it. I've been through the process myself. If you don't believe me, then should I say you're wrong? I think that you're wrong. I really do. I think that you just have to be willing for that to be a possibility, and then you have to take the next step. That's all that's separating you. To say that it can't happen, I think, is just false. I have too many clear, specific examples. So that is number two. They love the process of training. So number one, their training and their diet, their rest, their whole life, it's not an on or off switch, it's a dial. Number two, they love the process of training. Number three, they understand macros and or obsess over food quality. Let's take a sip. I want you to ponder that and I need at least 4 ounces from you right now. Okay? Come on now. Let's hit this. Woo! I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I actually just had myself a little Stevia Mountain Dew, which I'm going to be honest, didn't taste anything like actual Mountain Dew, unfortunately. But number three, they understand macros and or obsess over food quality. So here's the deal. When you understand macros, so these are macronutrients I'm talking about in food. Your food, when it's broken down and used as energy, goes into, it becomes either carbohydrate, fat, or protein. Now, we know protein helps rebuild muscle. Each gram of protein is 4 calories. You have carbohydrates, used as our primary energy source. Each gram of carbs is 4 calories. Then you have fats. Each gram of fat, this is stored long-term energy and just being satiated. I mean, I shouldn't go into every detail about it, but let's just say long-term energy, that's 9 grams nine calories per 1 gram. So when your food is digested, you have all those micronutrients. Those are all the vitamins and minerals you pull out of your food. Vitamin K, magnesium, like all those things. But then you have your macronutrients, which are these main energy sources. And so when you understand and you can look at food and see what the macros are, you have the ultimate flexibility in diet, because it doesn't matter whether it's, let's just say lean protein, for example. It doesn't matter whether it's chicken or ground beef or pork. It doesn't matter whether it's potato or, for carbs, rice or bread. Like all of these things, it's not that they don't matter, but you understand what they're gonna do for you and what the replacement could be. So you're never in that much of a bind, because even at the end of the day, if you have to eat in an airport or McDonald's or something super off the wall and weird, you can make the best decision based off of what you have. If you don't understand, and by the way, I should say, the best decision to serve your goals. So this is maintaining your body fat. This is making sure that you have the energy for your next ride or, during your ride. There are so many what ifs, ands, or buts if you don't understand macros. But if you do, you can literally look at any food and read the label. You know how it's going to respond to your body. It is just like, dude, it's a slam dunk. And also there's the people who obsess over food quality, and then hopefully you're doing both, to be honest. So basically, if you obsess over food quality, I'm assuming, and this goes down, there's a really good book called The Endurance Diet that is all about food quality and not as much about calories. But then again, there's another side to it, because if you're obsessed over food quality and you eat super high quality, it's also still very easy to overeat and become overweight. It's very easy. I'm not saying you're unhealthy just because you're a little overweight, but I'm just saying if you're really trying to control your body composition and you don't understand macros, going straight for food quality can be a huge improvement to your health, and there's a good chance it can improve your body fat levels, but there's way more ifs, ands, or buts. You don't have the clarity that you do get with the numbers. Now, mixing the two worlds is the ultimate thing that you can do, and the fittest people I promise you are cognizant of both. They understand both. You'll have the person that really understands macros, but they also understand that they need micronutrients from actual real fruits and vegetables and whole grains and healthy fats and nuts and seeds and all of those things. But they also understand that, if they want to have an Oreo, which of course is always my example because that's my biggest weakness, and they want to make room for it in their diet, that they can probably swap it out with a carb from a previous snack or some fats from their next meal. And they can make those substitutions to where, although again, it's lowering the quality of their diet, it keeps their, body composition under control. It keeps their energy levels under control, and you just have that freedom. So also, I just gotta say, this is why meal plans do not work. I've made a video on this before because up until I got very vocal about food tracking and I had the resources now where I can just send people links to a podcast or a blog post with everything they need to know about food tracking, people would just hit me up like, I need a meal plan. Like, write me a meal plan. I will follow it. And I did this. First off, I would spend hours writing people meal plans that they just didn't follow. after they asked for it. I've had people pay for it and they don't follow it because it doesn't teach you the principles of nutrition. If you want to understand food, you have to be willing to put in the work to learn about it. That in that process of tracking your food does it. If you're very focused on just food quality, then you need to also learn about artificial ingredients. You need to learn about where your food comes from, how it's grown. And there's so many other layers to it. So you can go either route. I recommend the macros and then just also being aware that you can't just eat Pop-Tarts. Like this isn't just a if it fits your macros, which people have tried to do. They're like, how aesthetically pleasing, how aesthetic can I look and how bad can I eat? And people have done I've seen YouTube videos on it and stuff. And it's really interesting because, you know, you'll have a guy eating McDonald's and Pop-Tarts and Oreos and drinking alcohol and stuff and actually maintaining somewhat of a decent physique. But you're gonna just die from malnutrition, basically. Like, it's not worth it. Not cool, not worth it. Just like you can, you know, learn to love exercise, you can learn to love foods you've never loved before. Again, I've been through this process. And so meal plans don't work. Learn how to understand food by tracking your macros. And I just have to remind you, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't have time to put my food on a scale or measure it or this, here's the alternative. This is the realest thing I can say right now. And this is for the people who really desperately want to change their body composition or just be more happy about their relationship with food or understanding what to eat when, yada, yada, performance, all that stuff. The alternative to learning and taking the time to measure and do those things is forever trying, air quotes, trying and not getting results. You are confused, you are discouraged, and you make little progress. And if anything, you're going backwards because again, you are creating neural pathways in your brain of failure. And it's gonna get easier to do over and over and over again. And this is not a guilt trip, this is just reality. The more times you start something and you're just trying and you're trying to do it your way because like I have to do it like this. And I don't mean to belittle people at all. I have totally been in this position as well, where I've had these thoughts. Like that's ultimately why I can say them. I've worked with people with this. They're so locked on to being like, no, I gotta do it like this. They end up trying, again, all air quotes, and never getting the results they want. And they're like tormented by it. Like I can't even count on both hands how many people I've had cry in sessions with me. You know, it's 5 a.m. and someone's bawling their eyes out because they're unhappy about their food choices. And then I just say, here's exactly what you do. Track your food and this and that. And they're like, no, that's too much work. I kid you not. These are the conversations I've had. So when I've had also people say, oh, you're too hard on yourself. You're too hard on other people. I am hard on myself and I'm hard on other people because of those experiences. I've watched the torment that people who can't control their food have. I mean, it's a very, very serious thing. So for you to struggle and for you to have these questions and feel like you're putting out all the effort and not getting the results you want, that's not going to change unless you just choose to track your food and learn how to eat. Like that is not going to change because even though it's like, oh, I've also had people say, oh, the numbers and the science, it's my body, it's different, it's unique, this and that. The thing is, you track and then you also interpret how you feel. It's not just look at the numbers and don't pay attention to your feelings. I'm not saying that at all. The only way to really be successful is to look at the numbers and then ask yourself, how do I feel? When you do those in together, then you get the results that you want and you don't have the guesswork. You know, if you're starving and you're like, I have just got to eat more carbs, or I'm going to scream at my wife, or I'm going to, you know, throw this thing at my kid's head. Like, if, again, thoughts I've had. If you feel that way, then guess what? You just track it and then you interpret how you feel and you say, you know what? Maybe I should add 200 calories worth, you know, 25 grams of carbs a day or whatever. So that's the whole process. And I bring it up and I'm serious about it because I want the best for people and I want the clarity for you guys and the reality of it's this or that. It's forever torment. For the people who are trying, again, quote unquote, or it's more effort up front, but clarity and ultimately understanding of diet and nutrition. So that is point number 3, way more of a rant than I expected to go on. But that is understand macros and or obsess over food quality. Let's take a sip of water. We got two more points, people. Now, number four. That was intense. Sorry about that, dudes. Hey, I'll tell you right now, I have actually been wanting to step up my diet. I've mentioned it on previous podcasts, but I've been drinking too much alcohol since my twins were born. It kind of flowed over from the shutdown and everything, to be honest. Just a little bit too much, like barely a little too much. And I actually reeled it in a lot over the last couple weeks. So I'd kind of gotten that in check. And then right away I realized, I was like, gosh, I am just hanging on to a little more body fat than I want. I need to start tracking food. But it's interesting because I've had a very hard time committing to it. And I'm telling you that honestly, because I do get when it feels like there's such a bad time to start, even though there's always an event, there's always something that you're like, oh, I'll wait till after that vacation, I'll wait till after this or that. But there are things like, dude, having the twins and adjusting the lifestyle around that has been so major. And obviously having a toddler too, like it's been so major that even though I understand how to food track and do all that, it's been very hard for me to fully commit to, even though I'm getting that feeling where I'm like, dude, I'm ready to ramp it up. So a lot of the passion you hear behind that, besides the facts and the stories that I told you, a lot of it does come from myself too, of like, it's like that inner motivation of like, okay, I'm like gearing up to do this thing again, you know? So anyways, that's kind of where that comes from. Just had to be real with you for sure. It's not always like that easy. I really do get that. Okay, number four, the fittest people you know, these fitness freaks, are comfortable being uncomfortable. And kind of my personal take on this, you can't get comfortable until you get uncomfortable. So obviously they're comfortable through the pain and the suffering that can be, you know, training, whether it's on the bike, whether it's in the gym. Obviously we have experienced that flow state. I hope you have, in both the gym and also, on your bike. So it's not like every time you're doing it, it's just pure pain. There's just moments of it. And in those moments you're okay and you're ready for, because you train yourself to be able to handle it. Like even now I notice, like I can be very relaxed even right before a hard effort or a big, you know, a set in the gym or whatever it is, because it's like I'm so, like I've trained my body to just, I know what it's gonna feel like, I'm gonna be okay. Like it doesn't stress me out the way it used to, for instance. However, I still feel like I can't fully relax until I do my exercise that day. And there's a couple of reasons. There's obviously the endorphins and just the dopamine hit you get from exercise. That's very real. It puts you in a better mood. And we're gonna talk about that more in point number five. But I feel like, and I always tell my wife, I gotta release my wiggles. You know, I gotta get my energy out, especially sometimes with, you know, certain family things, or if we're sitting or traveling or just doing something that isn't active, or maybe just something that I don't find very fun. That we have to do for whatever reason, if I get my wiggles out before, it's so much more enjoyable. Or let's just say I do have a fun night plan, but it just revolves around like, you know, just being out with friends or whatever. Maybe even if it's going to a movie or something, which by the way, I have not done in forever. I'm sure a lot of you have, and I miss that. But it's like I can enjoy it so much more when I know my hard work of training is done that day. It's like you can really just let your body go and relax. And this is like the coolest thing. It's like the peaks and valleys. So you get kind of the valley, maybe for some people, is the hard training, where you just put yourself through the pain, through the struggle. But then when you actually relax, it's so much more rewarding. It's so much more relaxing than if you had been kind of static all day, if you'd been kind of stationary or sedentary, if you were like that, static, stationary, sedentary, insert S word here. Like if you were just very flatline all day and then you do an activity that's also flatline, I promise you it's not going to be as enjoyable as if you got your wiggles out, got a hard workout in, or just your specific workout, your session. When you do get that opportunity to bring it back down and relax, oh, it's just like it's even that much better. Like, okay, for an example, I'll tell you right now, going and sitting at the beach, again, something I don't really do with kids the age that I have, but when I would go sit and lay on the beach for 2 hours, whether that's at the lake or the actual ocean, whatever, it was always so much more relaxing if I had gotten that ride in before, that workout. And I'm sure a lot of people listening can understand this. You know that feeling, dude. It's just way more of an unwinding thing. So, AKA, you can't be comfortable until you get uncomfortable, and you're comfortable with being uncomfortable. It's the combo. That is number four. This is, and then it becomes something you crave, something that you intentionally put in your schedule to make the rest of your life better. And that brings us to number five. They train like their life depends on it, AKA the quality of their life, because guess what? Your life does depend on it. Now, let's take a sip of water. I'm drinking. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the deal. The endorphin hit, the fulfillment of following through on your goals, the bettering yourself side of exercise, the what you learn about yourself through the process and through the struggle, and the discipline that you build, these are things that snowball and make your life better. And the people who train effortlessly and are fitness freaks and live this lifestyle, they know that, and they train like their life freaking depends on it, because it does. Your life does depend on it. It frustrates me how nonchalant people are about their lives. People get so complacent, and it's just purely out of comfort. And you know, maybe it's just where I'm at in life. I have a lot of ambition. There's a lot of things I'm trying to chase. But at the end of the day, I don't get why people are so nonchalant. Like, and again, it goes back to someone telling me, oh, you're hard on yourself. Yeah, I'm hard on myself. No one's gonna do this for me. No one else is gonna provide what I'm trying to provide. I get one shot. I'm this age one time. This is it. And it sounds intense and it's off-putting to some people. And I don't approach my life like this 24/7, of course. Like, you can't. You know, I just heard that great quote. It's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener at war. This is like that mentality. You're training yourself up to be a warrior, to have the most calm life possible. That's like the ultimate goal. But you gotta be freaking ready for battle, and you have to make decisions in your work life, with your fitness, with your health, with your relationships. Like, your life depends on it, because it does. It snowballs. When you have a better workout, you come home as a better, happier, healthier husband to your family. Or a wife to your family. You come into work with more clarity, with a better headspace, which is higher performance. Your impact from quality training is an ongoing snowball effect, whether it's positive or negative. Because guess what? If you intentionally missed your workout that day because you were just being flat out lazy, or you've lost sight of your goals and the purpose behind what you're doing, you know what? You're probably going to carry some of that energy into the rest of your day as well. So it is a crazy trickle effect that is very real. And the people who are fitness freaks, they understand this. And they know the rest of their life is better when their training is on point. And again, I've experienced this with food tracking as well. You feel like, I can't add another thing. But you add that extra little bit, and it just tightens down the hatches on everything else. And it can be a very, very good feeling. And so that's all I got to say, is that you have to train like your life depends on it, because it actually does. it in the realest way possible. You don't get these days back. You don't. I have a poster on my wall, and it's called My Life in Weeks. And I ordered it. You could do 100 years, or you could do the average American lifespan, which is 85 years, 82 years, 80 years, something like that. It's next to my bed, and there's a bunch of squares. And every row, going left to right, I always forget like rows and columns, going left to right is 1 year. So there's like, now I forget how many weeks are in a year, 54, 56, it's one of the two. Now I sound like an idiot, and this isn't even gonna impact you. Here's the deal, every square is a week. Every week you have to shade in the square. And then you slowly watch your squares get filled in, and that's your life. And I have it there because it's kind of morbid, but it's a reminder of how impactful every week of your life is. And again, this is not to stress you out, but it's to put the real value of your time in your head. When you shade out a week, it's not coming back, and you're 1 week closer to not having any more. That's it, plain and simple. So train like your life depends on it, people. Like, you are blessed to be a blessing. If you are listening to this podcast on your iPhone, if you're in your car, you're on Bluetooth, you have a coffee in your hand, you are, oh my gosh, the freedom. Your ability to choose the life that you have and the impact that you can have on people is, it's something not to take lightly. So let's go over this again. The five habits of fitness freaks. First off, they're radiant. It looks effortless. That's because number one, their training is a dial. It's not an on or off switch. They are consistent. Number two, they love the process of training. And if they don't, they learn to love it because you can. Number three, they understand macros and or obsess over food quality. Number four, they are comfortable being uncomfortable, aka they can't get comfortable until they are uncomfortable. Number five, they train like their life depends on it. I hope this inspires you. I'm kind of fired up now, you know? I wish I wasn't sitting in here by myself. Actually, it's probably a good thing because maybe I'd be a little bit too extra to people around me right now. So thanks for taking it in. And I hope you guys freaking crush it, man. Let's start moving forward. Welcome to Weekly Thoughts with Derek. This is my opportunity to talk about whatever the heck I want. 5 to 10 minutes. Well, actually, I'm not going to even give myself a time frame because it seems like when I say 5 minutes, I go 10 minutes. And when I say 10 minutes, I go 20 minutes. So we're just going to try and keep it short. There's two main things that I want to talk about. Okay, the first thing I want to talk about is that I'm really stepping my game up for training this month for the Everesting Challenge. Here's exactly what I'm doing. Typically, on my indoor trainer rides, I do 90 minutes. I'm upping it to 120 minutes. So 2 hours each session. It's going to be an extra hour of volume per week. And again, it doesn't seem drastic, but this is a very realistic change that I can make. And again, you have to remember, when you up volume anywhere, you also have to up your recovery. So I've noticed that I've had a couple bad nights of sleep last week. And when I stopped sleeping as well, and again, they weren't bad nights of sleep because I have a hard time sleeping. It was just because I wasn't able to sleep more than like 6 hours. And doing that repetitively, I can handle it mentally because I've been so much more sleep deprived than that. But it's crazy, but I get sore joints. Like, I can just tell my recovery is not where it should be. Like, even my knees will feel sore. And it's purely because of my lack of sleep. And I noticed it first when I upped my riding volume in general at a time where I was getting very, very few hours of sleep a night. You know, for reference, it was like I would probably average 6 hours. A lot of nights I'd get five. Some nights I'd get 6.5, 7. But not good, especially when you start training more and more. So I had to start sleeping more, and then my knee pain went away. Which is really crazy. And I haven't felt that since, but dude, I just upped my volume slightly, a couple bad nights of sleep, my knees started kind of aching. So that was something I had to pay attention to. And I'm just throwing it out there because I don't just kind of send it and do whatever I want. Like, I have to be pretty intentional in regards to training. Like, I know I'm young, I know I'm this, and I know I'm that, yada, yada, yada. But I can't just do anything. Also, I'll say, like, even the calf raises totally messed up my right leg, which is my ACL operation leg. I had the weirdest DOMS in that leg, for instance. Same thing happens when I do pistol squats for some reason. So, long story short, I'm upping my training. We're doing more ride volume on the trainer. And then I'm going to add push-ups on my Monday rest day. So, typically, I just do 2 total body strength days. But I'm going to be descending 29,000 feet for the Everesting Challenge, and I want to have some more muscular endurance as far as a pushing goes, like pushing my weight down on the bars and standing for that much. And I want to do a lot of push-ups. I think it's like the smartest thing to add. And because I know I can't add too much to my current strength days, which have also upped intensity slightly, just doing a little heavier movements to, again, just trying to build myself more durable for this event. But I can't up the volume that much more. And I'm like, you know, I'm only strength training 2 days per week, which, although it's ideal for cyclists, when you have these like specific goals, you kind of want to balance out your strength volume. So Monday, it seemed like the perfect option because I could still let my legs rest. I can just do push-ups and some light mobility and kind of see how that works. So I'm trying it out. I'm definitely feeling sore. I did 150 push-ups yesterday, but my goal is to do 250 on each Monday. So kind of curious to see what that does. And also aesthetically, if I actually put more muscle back on my chest. And I say back on my chest because I've actually in the last year done a lot more shoulder training, simply because I really enjoy pressing. I really enjoy kettlebells, and I haven't done as much horizontal press, which is like more chest movements, which is what I used to do a lot of. So that transition, although my shoulders have gotten stronger and a little bit bigger, my chest has gotten a little bit weaker and a little bit smaller. Kind of interesting. So I'm adding that back in. So I'm excited. I know it's going to help my descending for the vert challenge, but I'm also curious to see, it's like, okay, can I still recover enough putting out that training stress that day? And can I, you know, build a bigger, stronger chest? So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. So that's my training switch up. Everything else is going to be the same. Like I said, I'm just going a little heavier, a little more barbell movements right now in my strength work. But an extra hour total of ride volume. And then I'm doing more push-ups. So that's pretty much it. Now, the other thing I got to talk about is my ride on the Epic Evo. This is Specialized. It's their beefed up XC bike, basically, or really slim trail bike. Is that a good way to put it? You know, you look at a bike range for most companies and they have like an XC bike and they have a short travel trail bike and they have a mid travel trail bike and a long travel trail bike. Some just have short and mid or just mid and long, but basically they have this wide range of bikes, right? And then comes the downcountry bikes, which is this it's a funny name, but man, they're so sick. And the Epic Evo fits the bill perfectly because it's right between a short travel trail bike, like my Stump Jumper, and a cross country bike, like the normal Epic. So the Epic Evo looks very similar to a normal Epic. Like, it looks more like an XC bike. And I would say it's more comparable to an XC bike than a trail bike, especially after riding it. But it has a little more aggressive geometry, 10 more mils of travel front and rear. It also has a dropper post, and I think it comes with a shorter stem, but I haven't looked at all the specifics and differences. But basically, I had the opportunity to demo the Epic or the Epic Evo, and because of a ride I was going to go on with some big descents, I was like, oh, the Epic Evo is going to be way more fun. Up in Tahoe, yada, yada. Long story short, the ride fell through and I ended up doing my own loops where I started on a super gnarly trail because I actually just really wanted to ride this trail. And I knew the second half of the trail would be perfect for the Epic Evo, but dude, the first couple minutes of descending, I posted it on my Instagram of it, these rock slabs. And I don't know if it looked hard to the people watching, but it was so gnarly to get that bike down that trail. I know for a fact that's the shortest travel bike that has gone down that. Like 110 mil travel in the rear, down these rock slab drops. I was like, dude, this is wild. So it was cool to see what the bike can do. And it really did hold its own. But of course, it just excels so much more on the smoother single track. You look at the whole day, the transfers, the climbs, it just, the whole bike is so much faster when you look at the course of the whole day, right? But without a doubt, my Stump Jumper or even a longer travel trail bike would have been way better for those rock slabs and maybe even better for some of the more gravity fed stuff, because the Epic Evo, it's still like your body position still has to go more toward an XC position. And this was really surprising to me the first time I rode an XC bike because I was not expecting this. But when you look at a more like enduro racer versus an XC rider, just look at their body positions. Like, there is such a big difference, and I felt it. So obviously when you're on even a shorter travel trail bike like my Stumpy, you still have that, I'll just call it the lean back and plow, kind of like a stand-up position where your butt's back, maybe you're more upright, and you are kind of just leaning back a little bit more. Even though a Stump Jumper in the enduro world is far from a lean back and plow bike, it's not an enduro, there's a big difference. But when you compare it to a bike like the Epic or even the Epic Evo that I rode, you have to all of a sudden get more over the front, and you have to bend your elbows, like you have to get your chest a little bit lower. And it was really interesting. Like, that was the biggest thing I noticed, was I wasn't able to like kind of stand up and extend my arms as much. I had to literally kind of crouch over the front more just to keep balanced on the bike and just to steer it correctly and to make sure like I could pull up when I needed to and have the braking support. And it was really interesting. So I think, in my opinion, I think the Epic Evo does ride more like an XC bike than a trail bike. And I think it's a really good fit if you want to ride, I would say, more tamed down trails or want to do really big backcountry like single track days. And there's, by the way, I had horrible tires on for what I rode. I know that there's some tweaks I can make to make that bike even more mobetta for the bigger like enduro style trails. But what's cool about it is like, if you did get caught up on some super tech terrain, the bike can handle it. And I don't know about your skill level, but like the bike can do it. But I'll tell you like my honest opinion, like I went and rode a trail loop that was absolutely perfect for the Epic Evo. And literally in my head, I was like, I wouldn't want to be on any other bike. And not only is this trail fun, but so many of these other trails are fun, where it was like classic Tahoe, kind of hard pack, like loose over soft single track, some rocks here and there. It was just fast, fun, just, I was on and off fire roads. The bike was incredible. But I also thought if I saw like a 25 foot double right now, I would really hesitate to hit it. I just didn't feel as comfortable with the body position. Like, I don't know how I would hit like big jumps on that, or like there would be certain features that I'd really have to consider where even though my Stumpy's a shorter travel trail bike, I feel comfortable going and hitting all that stuff. Like, I feel like I can ride everything on my Stumpy, even though I have to tiptoe through certain like really gnarly stuff that you wouldn't have to on a bigger bike. I still feel capable to go ride it, but I don't with the Epic Evo. However, I'm talking about the most extreme side of downhill. Like, if you're not comfortably hitting 20-foot doubles, then don't worry about what I'm saying. But if you are someone who wants to maybe, you know, dive into the bike park for a second or ride some gnarlier trails, or you are just riding more enduro-style terrain, you definitely want to go more of the stump jumper route. If you're someone who really likes XC rolling trail, but maybe occasionally you get on these bigger descents and maybe you do huge backcountry days, dude, I think that Epic Evo is a slam dunk. Like, it is so rad. But again, I was surprised at how different that they actually were. But I think that's what's so cool about bikes. You know, everyone since trail bikes have come out, I've been searching for what is the do-it-all bike, and it just doesn't exist. It does not. Like, you're not going to find the do-it-all bike. So what you need to do is pick the bike that suits the terrain that you ride most, the best. Don't think of the most extreme case. Just think of, this is the majority of what I ride. What's the best bike for that? And that's what you should go for. For me, I still feel like it's more the stump jumper, but I also feel like I really want to try an XC race bike because I'm interested in XC racing. So I don't know. I'm sure it's going to change. I'm already noticing my appetite for certain types of trail is changing. And so, you know, who knows how that's going to evolve over the years to come. Because even going to the stump jumper that I'm on now was like a big like pull back in regards to just length of travel. You know, I came from downhill bikes and then long travel trail bikes enduro bikes, then now to short travel trail bikes. And now I'm riding like XC style bikes too. So it's crazy to like feel the difference. So anyways, you know what I'll tell you? By the way, there's a really good loop where I live. And it's called the Forest Hill Divide Loop. It's a 12 mile, I believe. Is it 12 miles? It's 12 miles, I think. It's 12 miles of It's like 12 miles of single track rolling. And when I got my stump jumper, like I said, I felt like this bike was so much lighter and smaller. I was like, oh, it's gonna be perfect for the Divide Loop. I went out there in great trail conditions and smashed my brains out. And I was like 8 minutes off the KOM. That right there just showed me. I was like, I know who's got the KOM. I know these people, whatever. And they're fitter than me, but like not 8 minutes. Like it just shows you on that type of terrain. It's a real XC trail, like a rolling trail. But again, still fun on a trail bike because the descents were cool enough. But it was just a real reminder of how much faster a proper XC bike actually is. And like taking an Epic Evo out there, I'm like, whoa, it would be so much faster. Like, no matter how fast you think you're going on a big trail bike, if you're on terrain that doesn't require it, you're just going to be moving slower, no matter what your effort level's like. So that's kind of the other side of the spectrum. So kind of interesting point. And I'm rambling now, so I'm going to let it go. Bikes are sick. Strength training's great. Thanks for listening to my heated passion in this episode. And that's it, man. Let's crush this week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dialed Health Podcast. If you are enjoying it, there's two things you can do to really help us out. It makes a huge difference and only takes a minute or two. The first thing you could do is give us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app and also just write a positive comment, say you're enjoying the episode. Anything positive honestly works. I'm not picky. The second thing you can do is to screenshot that you're listening to the episode and post it to your social media. Instagram stories is a perfect place to do this and tag Dialed Health. Not only will I be able to repost it, but it also shows your friends that you're listening and really helps with the growth of the podcast. Now, you can also go to dialedhealth.com and get a membership. Without a doubt, that'd be the most supportive thing you can do. And hopefully you can implement some strength training into your weekly routine and get the benefits of it and have the best rides possible. Thank you so much for the support. I hope you have an incredible week. We will see you next Wednesday.